Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show, y'all. I get to interview Tilly Delahaye today, and we're going to talk about her book, which I was just telling her before we started recording. It's very different than any book that I have ever done a podcast interview on, but I'm so excited about it. And I showed a picture on Instagram last week, was just talking about these are the books I'm reading right now, and heard from so many women who are like, I just finished that book, or I'm reading that book. I love it so much. So Tilly, start out by telling us about this book, My Dear Hemlock, because it is not your typical Christian women's book.
No, it's just a little weird, isn't it?
So weird is not.
It's quirky. Yes. It's quirky. When I went to try to see if this could be a book, I was aware I'm trying to sell a book to publishers that is a very eccentric project. But it's impossible to talk about this book without talking about C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters, because this is very much inspired and directly modeled after that book. So the Screwtape Letters is a collection of fictional letters by C.S. Lewis from one demon named Screwtape to his less experienced mentee demon, who's also his nephew. It's about 30 letters, and the subject of all of these letters is how to tempt the patient, which is the younger demon has been assigned this young man, and it's his job to draw him further and further away from who they call the enemy, which is God, and basically wreck his life in any way possible. So that, and he had this voice for the writer of these letters that was kind of like an Oxford Don, very sarcastic and very just intelligent. You know, it's a British voice. So I had a voice here. This is Madame Hoaxrot is writing letters to Hemlock on how to tempt the patient. But in this case, the patient is a female woman who is living today. And you start with her when she's in her maybe early 20s. She's a new believer. She's a Christian. But you follow her through that age until middle age. And it's about 30 letters, the same kind of thing, and on how to draw her further away from the enemy and make her life worse by feeding her lies. Different project.
Well, and like we were talking about before we started recording, it allows you to be able to talk about things in sort of a different way and approach subjects that need to be discussed, but in a more forthright way without it coming across so forthright.
That's right. And yeah, this is not like a demonology type of book. Like, I'm not some demon expert. It's what it's really about is about the human heart. It's about the things that tempt us and the temptations and the tendencies that we have. And in our relationships, there's a lot about marriage. And yeah, just using this voice and fictionalizing things that are very, very real to life, it allowed me to get in and write about things in a really vivid way that if I had sat down to just write like a straight prose article about them, you know, it would have been very difficult. And that's actually how this started. I went to write a piece about marriage. It's a chapter that's in there now called Marrying Down, about, you know, get the patient to believe that she has really and truly married a man who's inferior to her, because she is really meant for something better out there, some life of fame or something that she could have been for. And the eyes of her husband then are never enough if you can get her to believe that he's her inferior. But I wanted to write about this subject, and I was like, how on earth, what am I going to sit down? Like, hey, ladies, you know, do you think that you're better than your husband? I just like, how do you write about this? But it was a real phenomenon I was seeing. So the voice and the fiction allowed me to bring really vivid illustrations in. This is a character, you know, but to write about something that I think a lot of women connect with. So And there's been, you know, a lot of other things that I found, oh, here's a great way to approach this. And also, you know, for the Christian woman to keep us aware in our daily life of what would God want to see me thinking and doing in this moment? And does Satan have an opinion about this moment? Because he does. And we're talking about small private things like how you greet your husband when he comes home, or how you, whether you are practicing hospitality and how you do that, or, you know, things that you think are private just between you and yourself, you know, and just realizing that it's part of a greater battle that you're in, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. So,
and I feel like it begs the question of spiritual warfare is a real thing.
Right.
And I'd love for you to kind of talk about that a little bit and how you approach this and like your thoughts of, I feel like sometimes we can discount it.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not from a Christian tradition that is extremely charismatic or overly concerned with the things of angels or demons, really. And I think that was why it was a really good exercise for me personally to be thinking more about these things rather than less. I know you can't, I think you can think too much about it, mm-hmm. and give them more power than they really have. But I think it's very healthy for some of us to really sit down and think like, this is real. You know, if we believe the Bible, and I do, then I believe that there is an enemy, and he really is out to steal, kill, and destroy. And he has a plan, you know, he has something that he wants to see in my life. So what is that? And it's not so as to give him more power. It's so as to, you know, laugh about him and then move forward in what you're supposed to be doing. So
I think also recognizing that in our day-to-day life, I thought it was funny. You have these like humorous bits throughout where you're talking about like, today it was like, you know, messing with the shopping cart wheels.
Yes. it's been a fun weekend inhabiting the front left wheel of a Walmart shopping cart. That stuff is just, it's just for fun, I guess, really. You know, the idea of some Walmart shopping carts are so bad that there must be demons involved.
But, yeah. But I also think it, for me, like understanding that, you know, Satan is out to still kill and destroy our lives. And so sometimes it's like those little things that can become really annoying, seeing it as like, how am I going to respond mm-hmm. out of, you know, understanding like the truth of who I am in Christ and recognize that like, I don't have to be annoyed by this thing. You know, mm-hmm. I can choose my response. I can't necessarily always choose the situation, but I can choose my response and to choose to respond in a way that is glorifying the Lord. And I think, you know, just little things like that, even though it's humorous throughout the book, I think that in our day-to-day lives, sometimes those are the things. It's like the littlest things in our marriage. I feel like mm-hmm. it's always, we have the fights over the stupidest things.
Right, right.
And it's those little things. And so recognizing like, ooh, Satan would love to use him putting his socks on the floor as like the thing that is going to just create this, you know, combustible situation mm-hmm. in our marriage. And so to go throughout our day, you know, choosing our responses and understanding that we can, in the midst of frustrating and in the midst of things that could cause us a lot of annoyance and irritation, we get to choose our response.
That's right. And yeah, and just remembering like those things matter. They matter so much. One of the earliest chapters is like they're newlyweds, and it's saying, the demon's saying, get in there early and make sure that she does not show the same common courtesy to her husband that she would show anyone else who's mm-hmm. in her house, anyone else she would speak to a certain way or just think about their needs, thank them, get her to think that in order to praise or thank him for anything, she has to be in total approval of everything he's ever done. Mm-hmm. Because for some reason, we think that when we're going to praise our children or, you know, we think, if I praise them for this thing, they're going to think I'm saying it's okay that they left their socks on the floor, that they didn't do this other thing over here. And you basically use that bizarre human assumption to stop up the gratitude in her life mm-hmm. that is toward her spouse, but that expands to gratitude to God. Every little gift that he gives her, you can shut her down in this thunderous silence of an unspoken thanks, and it will spread in mm-hmm. her life. So little things matter.
Yes, it matters so much. And I think that you talk about this so well. And you said every time they witness something praiseworthy, their eyes are drawn immediately to a dozen other things which they would wish to find fault. And it is so easy. I feel like that as a parent and in my marriage, mm-hmm. it is so easy to just have our eyes only see mm-hmm. the things to criticize.
Right.
And it's like my child walks in the room and immediately I'm noticing, oh man, you know, like their outfit doesn't match or, you know, that, like that's the thing I see instead of seeing like they're smiling and they're having a cheerful attitude and like they just helped sweep the floor and how we try to become the Holy Spirit in our husband's lives and in our children's life and how that truly can just wreck relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't even talk about this in the book, but I have thought about just the uniquely female ability to imagine things as they aren't. Like that's part of why we can go into a space like you with your, you can go into a space and imagine, here's what I could do on a $20 budget. I can go and organize this area or whatever. You're imagining something that isn't, like something that's not there yet. So I think sometimes we're looking at our children and we're thinking, I want this little person who's like this to grow up into this big person who's like this. Or I'm looking at my husband, unfortunately, trying to improve him, you know. And it's like, this is a superpower, I think, for women to be able to imagine transformation. But we misunderstand how to accomplish that, I think, especially when it comes to other people. Because people don't, their engines don't run off of criticism. Mm. They run off of praise. That's what every human being, especially our husbands and our children, but every human being is like that. So if we understand how transformation even really works, you know, for people, it will help us a lot.
That's so powerful. And I was thinking, especially with our kids, how we can see some tiny little thing that they've done and we blow it up into this big, you know, it's like they didn't follow through with something that they said they were supposed to do, which yes, we need to address, but instead of addressing it in this little situation, we're thinking of in 10 years from now, if they continue on like this, like they're going to be in prison. And so then we all of a sudden, like we are disciplining out of the fear of 10 years from now and it's overblowing something. And then we start to live in that fear and that stress and that worry. And I think for our husbands as well, you know, we can look at this, you know, one little thing that he's doing that is annoying us. And then all of a sudden it becomes everything he does annoys me. You know, we just blow it into this huge thing and then we can't see the good. You talk about, you're saying how, you know, encouraging, this is the wrong thing. It's hard to do this and say these things
in reverse.
You want to get her into the headspace that says, until he earns it, I will not give it. And, you know, I think we can get to that headspace so quickly and take up an offense for these little things. And then we're like, well, you didn't do what I wanted you to do. When a lot of times, we didn't even communicate that was important to us, but we take up this offense for something that we never even communicated. And then we are offended about everything he does. You talk about how earlier when we weren't recording, you said all of this was basically written off of things that you had personally experienced or someone close to you. And so like in your marriage, what are some things, like if we're going to flip it around to the positive, what are a few things that you would just really encourage women listening that can make such a difference to strengthen your marriage?
Yes. So one of the big things is praise. That is certainly one of the big ones, is just practicing, getting into a habit, maybe even writing down, like, here's five things today that I'm going to say thank you for. Mm-hmm. Just thank you. Because that's a form of praise. And making it very, very, even if you're not in the habit of doing that, just make it very, very practical. Do little things that will help you remember to do that. Have a friend that you're texting. Here's the five things I'm thanking my husband for today. I've done that before. And then another thing is taking ownership for your own spiritual growth rather than looking over his shoulder at his spiritual growth. And one of the ways that shows up, I think, in a Christian home where you're trying to get where there's a family devotion time and you're trying to get where both you and he are tending to your kind of spiritual health, you can start to be basically this spiritual six-year-old in the back seat that's like telling on your brother, you know, on the long ride home. And you're worried that he doesn't have a good prayer life, or he's not doing this, or he's not doing that. And I think it was three years ago, maybe, there was one night when I just realized, I really think it would do so much good for us in our marriage if we would pray together in the evenings. And instead of saying, what we would normally do is bring that to our husband and say, we really need to pray together more. Like, this is what we need to do. And so now there's another thing that you've just kind of tossed onto his lap and been like, here's another thing to remember that I'm unhappy about, you know? And instead, I realized I'm not going to throw this burden of remembering onto him. I'm going to make a resolution, I guess, for myself every night after he gets done putting the kids down for bed, because he was doing it every single night, and then coming trudging back into the room, you know, where we would get on our phones or do whatever you do when the kids go down. And that moment of him walking back in the room, I was going to attach the habit to that of, let's pray together. I'm just saying right now, like right now, can we pray together? And it's 3 minutes, you know. But guess what? When you pray together in the evening, you talk with each other before and after you pray, because you have to talk about, well, what are the burdens of the day? Like, what are the hard things that I haven't even processed, you know, yet? So just things like that where you're realizing there are ways of asking for things with your husband that are burdensome. And there are other ways of being a helper to him. And he has been so grateful for that habit that is now a part of our married life. And now I'm not always the one who brings it. You know, I'm not always the one who has to remember. But for a good month or two, there was no, hey, you need to remember this more. It was just me saying, I'm going to do this, you know. So that's just an example of the kind of thing that I think women can take responsibility without being hard and brittle, henpecking types of women, you know. There's a gentle and quiet way.
Well, and I think, like, I know for me, when I approach my husband with, you need or you should,
yes,
immediately he interprets that as he's failing.
That's right.
Like, he hasn't done enough. And so I love that, how you're flipping the script on that. Another thing for me is just sometimes just asking him, like, saying, I'm really struggling with this. Would you pray for me? You know, coming to him and not in a, you should be praying for me more or something, but more of like, I would love for you to just pray for me right now, because I'm really struggling. And he's always so willing to do that.
Right. And it's right now, like that, you know, it's a thing he can do right in this moment. It's not like, try to get this onto the rotation or whatever. It's just like, here's an action step. And for men, I know action steps are really something they can kind of get their hands on is really helpful for them. So yeah, that's great. Mm.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Maybe your child's struggling with a specific subject, or you feel like they just need extra help with their homework and you don't feel qualified to help them out. Or they're asking questions, or you just feel like in school, they're not just really at the pace that you would like for them to be, or maybe they're not being challenged enough in their class. IXL is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies, and it's designed to help kids really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. Silas used IXL in his math class, and he loved the data points that it gave him, and he loved how he was able to work ahead, and it just really motivated him in math, and is someone who really loves to see, you know, exactly where he is and all of the percentages and all of that. It was perfect for him. This program will improve your kids' grades. It will work for any of your kids because it's powered by advanced algorithms, so it gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And you can save time because one subscription gets you everything. You can use it for kids from pre-K to 12th grade. And A single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL, so it can save you money. 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. use IXL. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Crystal Payne Show listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I also loved that you had the section where you talk about how when there's trouble, humans always prefer a huge overhaul or a complicated theory to a simple task. Talk more about that.
Yeah. So that's in that little section just about common courtesy, you know. And I think the idea is like when you start to get discourtesy, which turns to just habits of rudeness with your spouse, you do get to a point where you feel contempt for each other. And this is where hatred begins. Like, this is a serious thing. This is where a lot of middle-aged marriages, I think, just break up on the rocks of like silence, you know. And it's so sad, because to me it's so preventable if you catch it when the habits are still forming. So the problem is when you get to that place where you're like, we feel contempt for each other, you want a big, huge, tell me some big thing, like, well, you know, sell the house and move to the country, you know, or go on a big trip, whatever it is, big counseling. And I know things like that, big overhauls are necessary. But when you tell them like, well, how about this? Say thank you 5 times a day and pray together in the evenings once. It's like, that's not a big enough thing. It reminds me of the story of Naaman being told to go wash in the Jordan. And he thinks, this is not a big enough thing to cure me of this big disease that he has. I think we're all a little bit like that, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes. And I feel like in so many areas of our life, like, we want the big fix. We want the big overhaul. And we don't want to do those daily, simple mm-hmm. things that add up. And I feel like in marriage, it's really so much of the daily simple things. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where you really keep the sparks burning, is just in the daily thank you so much. Like, when you were talking about like your husband coming back from putting the kids to bed, like recognizing like he's just spent a lot of time putting the kids to bed, like just, you know, telling, like noticing those things, becoming a noticer of the good mm-hmm. instead of a criticizer of the bad, because yes. we'll always find things to criticize. But when we start looking for things to praise, we tend to see what we look for.
Yeah, that's right. And we tend to get more of what we praise and what we notice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just I think a lot of these chapters just came out of looking around and being like, look at all these good men, like these good, ordinary men going to work every day to support their families, and just met with thanklessness sometimes. And it's just heartbreaking, because it's so, I think a lot of it is just women who have fed on some pop culture idea of what a man should be, and are unable to see goodness where it is right when it's right in front of them. Either they're already married to it, or they're, you know, they're single and they're turning down these guys because they're not, I don't know, Hugh Grant or something. I don't know. So, yeah.
Yes, I do feel like media has really destroyed the ability for a woman to notice the ordinary good.
Right, right.
We want the big, extravagant things. I love also how you talk in here about prayer. And I was really convicted by the parts where you were talking about, you said distraction. Like, distraction is always your first move. And it was like, begin immediately implementing the standard tactic of intrusive thoughts, alternating between the mundane and accusatory and the worldly. And isn't it so true? When we start to pray, that is immediately when everything hits us of all the things we forgot we need to do. And so what are some encouragements for women who they want to practice the discipline of prayer, but they're struggling with making it happen and doing it without distraction?
Okay. So I'm going to say 3 things. Okay. So one is, if at all possible, if you know any other Christians who have any kind of habits of prayer, find someone that you can meet and pray with. And if there's a prayer group at your church, that's great. You could go and actually participate in that. That's how I learned to pray, was because of these normal Christians out in this tiny country church, just praying together once a week for 40 years. And I, you know, nervously start going to those meetings, dreading them every time, you know, but that's how I learned, you know, it's from older Christians. The demon says at the end of one of the chapters, try to prevent her praying on her knees. Mm. If you roll out of bed onto your knees, at least you know when you stopped praying. At least you know when you're done praying and you're getting up to go do something else. So at least you know, this is what I'm doing right now. Like, I'm here to pray. And then a third thing is choose a few passages of scripture that you can pray over people in your life as a way to just begin. Because the words are there and they're so rich, and they will inform how you pray for people. So if you're like, oh, I don't really know how to do this, scripture is such a great place to start.
Hmm. I also love, you talked about how we are so apt to say, I'm praying for you, but then not actually do that. And you talked about stopping and praying
right there and then.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing, like just this morning, I pray in the mornings on the treadmill because I find that if my feet are moving, my brain is walking. More focused.
Yes.
So I either pray when I'm walking outside or on the treadmill, depending upon whether I can go outside with kids that morning or not. And so this morning, as I was praying on the treadmill, like God was just, I was praying for specific people and then just sending a text and saying, I just prayed for you, and like telling them what I prayed, or like sending a voice text. I do that a lot if someone has just sent me, like, I'm really struggling with blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And instead of just being like, I'm so sorry, but to actually pray over them if it's, you know, if they're not right there, but to just send a voice text and pray over them. It's just like a way that I feel like it's actually praying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually, instead of saying, I will pray for you.
Right. It's almost a guarantee that you're going to forget. To me, at least, like, I will pray for you is the end of it. A lot of the time, my memory is terrible. So
I have to put it on my Google Calendar to remember to pray for someone.
Put a little alarm. If it's a big, huge, you know, burdensome thing in a friend's life, I might remember it. But if it is anything less than that, I usually forget. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just stopping, like I say this a lot, like I'll be like, I just stopped and prayed for you, because instead of saying, I will pray for you, I just stopped and prayed for you, so that it's like, I actually prayed. That's just helped me so much to kind of change that language around that, because I don't want to say, I'll pray for you and then not do that.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to talk about social media, because there is a chapter on that in here, and you have a lot to say on that, that I feel like is a really just gives perspective that isn't necessarily the kind of perspective that you usually hear. So tell us your thoughts on social media.
Okay. So the demons refer to our phones in this chapter. She refers to the phones as the pocket mirrors that the humans carry around with them. They said, you know, back in the day, they had to go find a mirror and look into it, but now the mirrors go everywhere with them. And that is a steal from a Tony Reinke book. I think 5 ways our phones are changing us, maybe. But he brought up that idea of the phone as a mirror, because it's showing you everything you love, everything you want to think about, everything that's kind of tasty to you. That's what your phone is bringing you. So then though, the demon basically says, here's the thing about these phones. Here's the thing about the screen. You are inviting, if you invite her to spend time on it, you're inviting her not just to have time stolen from her, but you're inviting her to actually leave the road of time, like to have her feet lifted up off the pavement of time. The enemy has designed them to walk 1 foot after the other down the road of his time within it. But you and I know we've rejected time, and it's, you know, the constraints or whatever. And when she's on her phone, she's actually removed from time. And then you're going to drop her down further down. She didn't experience any of those moments that were stolen, basically. And not only that, but she will become less and less able to even walk on the road of time. Like her muscles will atrophy, where not only can she not sit and enjoy or not only will she be less able to get work done and enjoy real work in the real world, but she'll even be unable to enjoy leisurely moments like with her friends or with her family. She will be weakened so that time feels burdensome to her in moments that shouldn't feel burdensome. Because time is like that. Some moments feel fast because you're doing something enjoyable and feel slower if it's a difficult thing. But the phone is almost more like it takes her out of time completely, almost like a drug addiction or something. So invite her to do that whenever you can, is what he's saying. So, yeah.
So how do we approach the phone, the mirror, in a way that is healthy? Like, is that possible?
Yeah. I'm going to sound like such a curmudgeon old person. I'm kind of a Luddite about some of these things. I've never found a way to do it. Like, I had to get off of Instagram completely, and it's gone. My account is not something I can even get into. So it was off my phone. The apps were off my phone. I still had, until maybe 4 months ago, I still had like a Safari on my phone with no social media accounts, but a Safari account that I could still get into, say, maybe read articles or get on Facebook or whatever. And I still felt like I was losing moments that I didn't intend to give away. And my husband too was frustrated. So somehow we found a way to make it where Safari can't even open on our phones. I don't know exactly what I did, but I disabled it. Mm-hmm. Some people, I was interviewing with someone who told me about Brick, like something where you can disable. I just think we don't need to put ourselves in a position where we're constantly having to use self-control to stay off of our phones. Mm-hmm. Because guess what? They're not designed to let us do that. They're not designed for that. They're designed to take as much of your time as they can. So I was ready to buy a flip phone. Like, that's where we were at with it. We were just so tired of the battle. And not having the internet on the phone, I can still listen to a podcast, which does not feel like stolen time. So you know what those things are, where you're like, I intended to give this time on a walk to listen to this podcast. This is a blessing. It's enriching my life. And you know that feeling where you meant to go sit and read a book and actually rest because you don't know how to rest anymore. And instead you lost 45 minutes on Instagram. You didn't intend to give that away, but it's gone. You know that feeling. So I guess the question is just, how much of your life do you want to miss?
Mm. And I think, you know, it can apply to, for different people, it looks different. Like for me, I had to give up audiobooks and I rarely listen to podcasts because I realized that I was filling my time when I was cleaning and cooking with that.
No silence.
And not having silence. Mm. And also it was constantly like, I'd be like not wanting the kids to talk or need me because I was listening to my thing.
Right.
You know? And so like, I think recognizing what does that look like for you? And it's going to look different for different people. Like one of my friends, she gave up all online shopping for a long time because she realized that that was something like she was going to as like, it was her fix.
Right. Yeah.
Like for me, that's not something, you know, but like we all have our things. And so like recognizing, I think that social media makes it incredibly hard not to become some sort of addiction drug, dopamine, because they specifically wire it for that, you know, like the endless scroll. Like there's always something more to see, but everyone is different. And so really to recognize what does
that
look
like? And then just set things up in such a way that you're not having to do that battle. Like you don't have to spend energy figuring out how many hours you just put on that thing. Do what it takes, do whatever it takes to set things up that are going to be working for you instead of working, you know, against you. So,
so good. Okay. We have to close with, there's so much more in here I want to talk about. You have a lot on friendship that I really want to talk about, but before we started recording, you were telling me about how you are so passionate about homemaking. And I would love for you to just close us out with, let's talk a little bit about just how you were saying, I can't say it as good as you. So just tell us you're passionate about homemaking and why are you so passionate about it?
Yes. So we have a little tagline. I have a podcast called Home Buyers, but the tagline is we're encouraging women to think of their homes as a wartime outpost of life in Christ while they await the better home to come. So just the idea that we are in wartime on this earth. it's a hard place, and there is a battle that's going on that we're involved in, battle against sin and even against Satan, as this, you know, book is about. But the idea that our homes are such a powerful haven and work and workplace where people are molded and shaped, and where the stranger is welcomed in, and the kinds of spiritual warfare that we do in and around our home, it's like ground zero. Like, it's such an important space for the long game. So just if women think of their homes as this last minute place where you come and you crash at the end of the day, it can't be that. It's not going to fulfill its full potential as a place of, as an outpost, a wartime outpost. So we as women have to understand the seriousness of it in order to make it that kind of a space. And it's something that we're uniquely fitted for and suited for. We're so good at it if we understand the challenge and if we understand the far-reaching effects of that challenge. So yeah, it's a big deal.
I think with doing foster care the last 5 years or so, we're no longer fostering. But when we were, recognizing how much of a difference it makes in a child's life to have a home, like a roof over their heads, but also secure people around them who love them and nurture them. And to just recognize that those day in, day out things that for many moms, it feels like, does this really matter?
Injury. Yeah.
Like, right. Is this really making a difference? Like, I'm just wiping the table, cleaning up Cheerios, you know, fixing another meal, giving another bath, like just doing the same thing over and over and over and over. But that matters so much.
Mm-hmm. And in this book, the demons are talking about this. They're talking about, like, we don't really know what is the substance in these homes, the dangerous ones, the ones that are dangerous to us. We don't know what it is. It's something, it has to do with the soup pot and with the freshly made bed and with the husband and the wife. And just like, we don't really know what it's made of. We're working on that, basically. And the same about women, about womanhood itself. Like, we don't know exactly why. What is the substance in her that makes her flexible and strong? Like, we don't know. We're back engineering it. We'll get back with you on what it is, but we're working on that. Somehow, though, it's extremely dangerous. So, yeah, those little moments in our homes are a big deal.
So for a mom who says, I haven't had that perspective and I felt like it's drudgery and I want to see my home as this ground zero space, what are just some practical baby steps that she can start to cultivate that?
Well, I think, you know, just getting on her knees and praying first and just saying, Lord, I don't understand this. Like, this is not something that was modeled, or this is not something I'm seeing. That would be a great just first place to start. Just ask for help. And then I would say, find another woman that you can see does get this, and just try to glean, like go and try to glean, and be careful that you don't mix up the, she has a nice, beautiful home that's perfectly appointed and always organized for the aroma that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about an aroma that has to do with relationships that are in order. So it could be happening in a 2-bedroom condo, you know, with a bunch of kids or whatever. Like, don't let the exterior circumstances of that home distract you, even though that's part of it. It is part of it. So yeah, go and learn.
I'm noticing as you're talking, there are two themes that you keep bringing up that I just feel like are so important and so vital, and that's prayer and community. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like those two things, Satan would love for us to not be praying and not be in community. And right. I feel like if you want to deepen your relationship with the Lord and walk closely with Him, not making time for prayer and not prioritizing community with other believers, like, those two things are going to be the thing that, you know, you're going to start just easily, you know, making some just, oh, like, this is okay. I can do this, you know, even though, like, your spirit feels like something is
off and we shouldn't be doing this, or spending more time on your phone instead of praying, or real life friendships. And so I really appreciate you bringing out these things that are so important for us to be praying, truly praying, and for us to be truly being in community with other believers, because I just feel like those two things, at least for me, have made such a huge difference. And when I'm not prioritizing them, that is when I feel like there is so much more spiritual attack, so much more me, you know, compromising, and me, you know, just giving in to like little things of, oh, that's probably okay. But it's like those little things, like we talked about, those little things lead to big things. And so prayer and community, I just encourage everyone who is listening, like, prioritize that. If, you know, there's so many choices in our life and so many choices constantly coming at us all day long of things that might look good and be good, but like choosing those best things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like prayer and community with other believers are that. So thank you so much for joining me today. We have so much more we could talk about. I feel like I need to have you back on so we can talk about friendship, because there's so much in this book that was so good about that. But it's kind of like this whole, it would be a whole podcast episode. But just encourage everyone listening, My Dear Hemlock, if you are looking for encouragement in your spiritual walk, encouragement to really lean hard on the Lord, to be challenged, this book is going to, it's going to step on your toes. Like, it can't not step on your toes, but in a way that hopefully is going to push you closer to Jesus and to be stronger in your faith, and to ultimately really, you know, look back at the end of your life and have lived a life that was just really honoring and glorifying the Lord and in close relationship with the Lord. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.